Good morning, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Just as a forewarning, this episode might get a little noisy, but I'm just going to go ahead and do it anyway because punctuality is more important to me than crystalline clear sound quality, I guess. Not that I'm butthurt or abrasive in any way about it. I'm recording this starting right now at 6 o'clock in the morning. This is the first thing I'm doing today. I don't have any notes, and I don't have any real strict ideas. I have a couple things that I think I want to talk about. This might be shorter, and yet again, the ambient quality might be a little bit different. Everybody's getting up and getting ready for their days and getting ready for school, and maybe that can be a lesson on just how to see the community of everything. But I'm going to take this as an opportunity for patience and an opportunity to learn how to focus. And one day I see myself on street corners, you know, heckling people like the great thinkers of old. I see myself, you know, in very noisy environments, most likely. You know, if I'm trying to speak my piece on a busy corner where people are trying to get to where they need to go, you know, I need to figure out some way to put a hook in and to inspire the attention in a way, whether or not it's loud or not. So, and I have this personal little theory that most of the noise that I worry about in these things are in my head and that nobody else notices them anyways. But as always, if you have any notes or if you would like me to change things up or to try something differently, you know, feel free to email me at my email address, which is thegingerbreadmansdialogues@gmail.com, which I will be putting into the show notes. I'm really serious about trying to have more conversations here. It'd be really nice just to have feedback and to not be in such a closed circuit. It makes a little bit more of a creative process for me, if that makes any sense. But either way, today I would like to talk about dreams. I'd like to talk about empathy and parenting. And I would like to talk about, I don't know, just some wooshy-gooshy stuff I've been thinking about. So first off, I've been dreaming a lot lately. And I think this might have something to do with my cannabis intake. I generally imbibe way too much. Especially when it comes towards the nighttime nether regions. I've always been in the state of mind where I've had to sedate myself in order to pass out instead of falling asleep. Whereas when I was very healthy, my sleeping patterns were simple. Like, I try to go to bed at the same time every night. I try to wake up around the same time. I get up very early. I try to go to bed early and get up early. I feel like that's better than the late and late for me. Not that it's that way for every single person and every single's lifestyle. But I like when I have a good relationship with sleep. And part of that is creating a good atmosphere. And so I don't have a TV in my bedroom. I try to stop watching technology like 30 minute at least. I've heard it should be even more, like an hour or 2 hours before bed. We should stop looking at screens. It has something to do with how the lights, especially the blue lights, I think, have severe effects on our brain patterns. And even when our eyes are closed, our eyes still pick up light and color. But darkness would be key for me. You know, I'm sleeping on a second floor bedroom now, and behind me is the street with all the Christmas lights that are being hung up, and I have found it very confusing because I'm a frequent waker-upper. I wake up several times throughout the night, and when I wake up, I typically look around, and I kind of do like a quick gauge to figure out what time I think it is, and if there's a bit of light, Like if there's any of that weird off light that's not completely dead black dark, it's a hint or a cue to me to figure out how early it is. And it's usually only like a 30-minute time period it takes for the sun to come up. Anyways, I used to be really good at being able to gauge that shadow, you know. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. Like, if you're, like, I used to, my favorite place to sleep is a basement, because it gets the darkest in a basement. And you could put something over the windows and make it even darker. But that jet blackness, as light slowly gradiates onto it, and the way that the sun comes up is the slowest thing, but it's quick enough to watch, which always just astonishes me. I live alongside the Rocky Mountains as well, and it's another effect you'll see is that when the sun comes up, the sun will hit the mountains first, you know, because the earth is curved. And as the light hits the top of the mountains, it slowly bleeds down the mountains until it hits, you know, the Front Range, because I don't live in the mountains. I live, like, right outside the mountains. I live mountain adjacent. But all of the light changes for me, especially in the morning, are really delicate. And I used to base my meditation around it as well, where I would meditate in front of my window that I could see up into the outside, and I would start my meditation when it was jet black, and then by the end of my meditation it would be daylight, and I'd only do like a 30 minute, which is why I know it happens that quickly, because I experienced it. Not that I actually ever read it, you know, and I never realized how quickly it comes up, but I digress. This is about dreams. I think dreams are conducive to good sleep as well. And if we're medicating ourselves to sleep, I don't think that that is necessarily the best kind of sleep. I think the best kind of sleep is unaided sleep. And unaided sleep comes from having a good relationship with sleep and the room and the routine and being able to have, I think, a degree of trust. I think trust would be the key word here. Trust in our own ability to do what we do every single day since we were born. You know, I think, like, there's, like, this hidden fear within me where I worry that I'm never going to get to go to sleep. Like, all right, there's this excellent Stephen King book called Insomnia, and I heavily encourage you to read it. And to, it's one of my favorites, honestly, hands down, one of the best books that I've ever read. And the premise of this book is you have a man who, I think his wife dies, and so he's like, he's alone, and he's sad, and he starts to lose sleep, but he loses it in like a weird way, and has nothing to do with like when he goes to sleep. He has no problem falling asleep, but he wakes up earlier every morning, and so say he usually gets up at 6 a.m., you know, the first morning he gets up 5 minutes early at 5:55, and so it's so subtle he doesn't even notice it, but over time he gets up 5 minutes early every day. So that eventually he's going to sleep at his normal time and waking up 2 hours later and starting to have crazy physical debilitative effects from his lack of sleep. And it's not like it's a choice either. And that's what's terrifying about the sleep thing, is that we have to trust ourselves to be able to fall into it. But I don't know. Even when I was little, I always thought that there was a chance that I would fail at falling asleep, which, what an easy battle that could seriously affect you. And a lot of people I know are struggling with sleep. Most of my friends are struggling with sleep right now. And I had really good sleep patterns for a while, so I'd look around and watch everybody complain about how horrible they felt because of their sleep. And I would try to give them advice. And the thing about sleep is it is such a personal thing. And I don't know if anybody could give another advice on how to make themselves trust themselves. I think that's the key of the issue here. When I am having good sleep and I'm not medicating to get to that point, I do start to get slumbers of dreams. I never was much of a dreamer, even when I was younger, to be honest. I remember really, like I'm having now, like very strange, obscure visions, but nothing like I ever expected a dream to be. Maybe it comes down to expectation then at that point. I remember having really strange dreams when I was younger, though. I lost my mother early. Like, she didn't die, but she left. She didn't want to be part of my life. Just something that my son also struggles with. And so when I was younger, I used to have a lot of time thinking about this, and it would intrude into my dreams a lot. And so that the dreams that I do remember even now, that I'm 26 years old, are the dreams that typically had to do with my mother. And I remember I'd have these dreams where I'd be, like, looking for her. Like, this one, I was, like, in, like, a truck or, like, a wagon or some sort of rolling carriage that I could ascend into and be inside. And I had, like, this flashlight or something, or, like, a beam. And I'd be scanning these, like, hills, but it was, like, a cartoon set. So it was, like, drawn, you know, and, like, real skeevy. Like, even to my little tiny mind, it all seems so wrong. And when you're inside of a dream, you can't really tell. And it's like, at least I can't. I think that's the key to this lucid dreaming idea that I find just very interesting and very invigorating. But lucid dreamers being the ones who happen to have complete control, who are knowledgeable that they're dreaming, I'm not sure if I've ever been completely knowledgeable. I think there's always like this veneer of confusion being in a dream. And I get really attached to them, you know? And it's weird because I lose my memory so quickly that when I wake up, they whisper away very quickly. And like, I knew I was dreaming tonight. Like, just like an hour ago, I was sitting in a dream. Less than an hour ago, you know, me, the gingerbread. I was sitting in some bizarre dream. And I woke up, and I'm sure it was stressful, because I woke up in a very tense mindset. It's kind of bizarre about dreams as well. Have you ever noticed how dreams can affect your entire day? I'll have these confused deja vu moments often too, where I will dream something that's happened, forget that I dreamed it. The next day comes around, and I'll have like these moments that were eerily close to what I was dreaming about. Not that I was predicting the future, because they were so banal and so normal that these things happen every day. And that's typically what I get dreams about. And I'd have this false memory from the dream and get it confused with reality. And that would really mess me up, man. Love to hear your dream moments and dream stories. If you have any really crazy, if you're a lucid dreamer, please, I'd love to hear stories. I if you're willing, I can even put your stories on the show. I'm always listening to the stories of how people experience their subjective consciousness when they're sleeping and dreaming. I heard this one story about this lucid dreamer. And he's very aware, and he's walking around this lake. And as he goes around this lake, everything looks very normal. And he knows he's dreaming. But then he comes up, and there's a real-world Beavis from Beavis and Butthead sitting on a bench next to the water. Like, something that's never been seen before, because obviously Beavis is a cartoon. And so this man has, in his brain, subjectified and created a real-world Beavis. And he's lucid enough at this point that he sees it and he just cracks out laughing, because it's so obvious that it's a dream, you know? And if there is a real subjective meaning behind it, like if a dream is a fortune, or if there actually are visions hidden within these things, or whatever. For him, when he saw Beavis, he was like, oh, this is proof that this is complete batshit crazy, and that everything that I experience in my lucid dreams is just a byproduct of my brain doing whatever it's doing, because there's no way there's a real world Beavis. And the guy who was interviewing him said that if there was a God that wanted to intrude in your consciousness, wouldn't the best time period to be while you were sleeping? And wouldn't the best thing to appear to you be to be something ridiculous and relatable, like a real-world Beavis that you can't help but notice? Wouldn't that be the best form or persona or angle of expression? But I don't get those. I don't get lucid dreams. And I'm not going to say I'm boring again. I just don't think that even in a dream that I'm paying attention enough. I think throughout most of my life, the way that I approached living wasn't in an appreciative, present-minded state. I didn't have my senses focused towards really what I was doing. I focused towards my expectations and what I wanted. And I think that that frame of mind would be just hyperized within the dream world. And that when I'm there, I'm probably even more oblivious. To create things requires complete presentness. And I was always running away from the present, which is why it was hard for me to create things. So I didn't want to sit there and bring something into the world in this birthing process. Sometimes you just have to jump and just do it. And I think I swear that this is purely just a thought, not a judgment or a distinction. But I think that the more present we are, the more mindful we are, and the more we are focusing on trying to bring this into our lives, the more the quality of our dreams and the way, because imagine that this dream world is actually another world. Like, it's not like a really another world, but it is the definition of a different frame of consciousness. This frame of this state, there we go, state of consciousness that we are in right now, this waking mindset. This is just one way to be. If you're sober, you know, I haven't had time to do anything right now. I'm sipping a cup of coffee, so this is a very clear state. And I haven't been able to get tired yet. When you start to get tired, that affects your consciousness. When you get angry, mad, sad, glad, happy, joyful, all these different emotions affect how we perceive things and how we have our sensory equipment aimed at the outside world. When you're high, when you're under the influence, when you're above the influence, all these things are different states of consciousness. And I think that the sleeping mind, when it's completely different than anything else that is ever experienced during the waking mind, you know, I haven't done enough research. I bought a book on dreams, and maybe I'll come back to this topic when I'm a little bit more well-versed. All I have is subjective opinion and feelings at this point. But the brain is doing something very bizarre, and I find it very intriguing. And I wish I had dreams to talk about. Maybe I'll start keeping a dream journal. We can go into that more. But that's enough on that topic today. Empathy and parenting. I've been reading this excellent book by this guy named Bruno Bietelheim. He's an older man, and he wrote this book called Good Enough Parenting. And I know that I've already mentioned it on the show before. It's a very good one, though. It's very philosophical. He's a very intelligent man. He brings in a lot of different references and a lot of different angles on how to think about this parenting debacle. I'm very grateful for the parenting this week. My son has had many good days in a row. I'm very proud. I can't even tell you how proud. But within this proudness, I've been finding myself falling into old routines of anger and disservice to my boy, to my parenting. And I think a lot of it comes down to empathy. Where, do I have my book down here? I have two shakes, I'm just gonna walk. So, chapter I read last night, the introductory quote was a definition from the shorter Oxford English Dictionary. Empathy is the power of projecting one's personality into and so fully comprehending the object of contemplation. So that depersonalizes the word heavily, where empathy doesn't have to be between two humans anymore or two even living creatures. You can have empathy for a rug if you can seriously try to put yourself into the rug state. You know, like there's an empathy for that. But when it comes to parenting, empathy for your child is being able to allow them to have a voice, allowing them to have an opinion and options, allowing them to not feel good about things. And a lot of that means punishment or even asking them to do something. When you ask your child to do something, when somebody asks you to do something, it's hard. You know, when I can't do something that I want to do, that's the biggest thing that I want to do in the world. Like, control over our lives is not an adult attribute. Wanting control over our lives and the solidarity that comes within being our own person, our own boy, our own man, our own girl, our own woman, our own they, the solidarity to create ourselves, we're born with it. And sometimes it might be too powerful. If we have too much selfdom, we get away from the we-dom and we stop thinking about the us and we start to get too selfish, which is kind of where I found myself when it comes to being a parent recently, is that I have found myself unable to get out of my concrete mind. Where, what do I want? I want control over my life. Who's in my life? My son. He is a soldier in my army. But wanting the best for him doesn't involve control. So controlling all these things has been working against my efforts and working against me and my son and my parenting and my family. Wanting him to do what I want is never conducive to parenting. Being a good example so that the child can grow to be good enough and to be able to handle their environment and to be happy with it. Doesn't matter if they're thriving or succeeding, but as long as they can make an environment for themselves, which means practicing their own individual solidarity. As a parent, if we constantly take away their ability to make choices and we always force our own will upon our children, they can't practice their own solidarity and they're not able to become functioning humans, really. So I'm angry and I'm fierce because I don't feel respected. What is respect? It's something that's due to my son as well. By constantly imposing my will forcefully, I take away my son's respect, or the respect that I should be giving my son, that he deserves. Because to give him the time of day to think it through, especially at his age, he's almost 7. He's not a toddler anymore. He needs to make mistakes. He needs to practice using his own will. And we have to work together as a team. But as the team leader, that is I, what can I do to model behavior to him? Which modeling behavior isn't forcing behavior, it's being. It's being a man, being an adult, showing him what he can be. And that doesn't require force. That requires empathy. So the Bruno guy. I'm on like chapter 10. And virtually every single chapter seems to be about the same thing, which is this empathy thing. And he keeps boiling it down and condensing it and distilling it into a much finer product. We have to look at our children, even in a difficult moment, and put ourselves in their place. You know, for instance, I've been struggling with bedtime routines. You know, I had an awful night last night trying to get my son down to sleep, which is why I'm doing this now. I was going to record last night. Then I got into an argument with my young child, and I belittled myself down to become like a young child. And I bickered and, you know, ruined his sleep because, you know, if I just walked away, he would have been asleep much earlier. And then I fell asleep in bed with him. And so then, I mean, I got extra sleep. I woke up early and I was like, shit, it's Friday. What episode am I going to put out today? And that's why we are here now. But these bedtime routines, he sees me stay up after him every time. Unless I lay down with him, it's very rare that I'm going to bed at the same time as my son. Okay. So, anybody sees somebody else do something that they're not allowed to do, and if they want to keep playing video games or keep playing or keep seeing the family or keep just doing things, just keep doing things, period. If they want to do that and they see their leader, the one who's modeling their behavior, getting to do stuff they don't want to do, that creates a atmosphere of unfairness. And I know fairness is a huge topic on the show. We speak about it a lot. What is fair? But fair is fair to you. Whatever you decide is fair or unfair in the moment, that's what you feel. So, step one, it's automatically not a fair situation. Step two, how do I go about enforcing it? Stone cold concrete. You know, there's no chances. As soon as he messes up, he loses his books. He immediately starts to lose things as soon as he starts to argue because I'm short, I'm tired, and I'm sick of fighting around this time period. So he feels that it's not fair. The person he has to interact with, his human resource officer about the situation, which is me, Dad, always, is unable to have a decent conversation with him about it, or at least talk to him about it, or at least be kind about it, or compassionate about it, or at least have the second to listen to him about it. Instead, every single night, Dad is just force and fire and vehemence. You know. I haven't empathized about this, but even in the moment, I don't know if you can hear it, my voice, I could see where I have made the situation worse and where I could have made it better with a little bit more gentleness and a little bit more empathy. And to sit down, maybe, hey, I know it's not fair right now. You have school in the morning. You need more rest than me. Daddies and mommies don't need as much sleep as little kids do. You know, that could be expressed and explained. And maybe we can even get into the science about it so you can understand it more. You know, some people need less sleep. Children need more. Significantly more. And I'm of the firm belief that a lot of the kids nowadays aren't getting enough sleep. You know, I've been very strict about his routines on when he gets to go to bed, which is, you know, 6:37, which has been pretty strict for several years now. Maybe in a decade, it can go up another hour. But there's ways to communicate the reasons why I'm rationalizing it. And then the second part of it is communicating our own feelings, communicating our own wishes to create this empathy link, but also to try to understand his. And that give him the ability, or her, whatever your child is, insert here, insert the situation here. Give them the time to express themselves, even if you don't agree. And try to use some language that shows that you're listening to their side and listening to their reasoning and their why. I think it's very important, and it's something that I need to work on and that I haven't been doing a very good job about. And if I'm not, I'm sure there's other people who relate to me out there. But it's very important. Very, 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 very important, because it's the future. It's the future of our race at stake, our kids. Just realizing it's been a while since we've actually had a real parenting powwow. Talking about a lot of wooshy-gooshy spiritual stuff and a lot of sciencey stuff. I haven't had enough interviews lately. I want to do more interviews soon. I've just been very tired, and trying to coordinate with people is exhausting. And I've just been choosing not to. But here soon, I will sit down with some more people, and we'll get some more other people's perspectives on the show, so that you can hear other voices other than my monologues and diatribes to myself and to you. But yeah, this is a lull. This is certainly a lull in the show. I've been finding a little more difficulty finding material. It'd be cool. Like, I know I've been begging for feedback this entire couple episodes. But give me some topics. I'll peruse for your enjoyment. Might take a little bit of skin off my back to know what direction I'm heading next week. But we're going to pick back up here soon. You know, we're coming up to the winter solstice with the daytime so short. I've always felt that this time of year is a moment to recluse back inside, to not exactly hibernate, because we still got to go out and we still got to work. We still got to do our day jobs. We still got to parent. We still got to be big boys and big girls. But, you know, when we get to come home, you know, and this is a weird winter too. I don't know how it is where you are, but it's hot as hell here. Yesterday was December and it was 75 degrees in Colorado, which is so strange. But typically you get to come home. If it's cold out, you can wrap up in a blanket and not feel guilty about not being outside. When it's hot and it's summertime, I always feel guilty about not using the nice weather. You know, speaking of the nice weather, though, I got off work early yesterday, around 12:30. Well, I got called in early too, which is cool. My hours would get cut because I've been having to leave work a lot. It's been a little stressful. But so I get to go in early, 6:45, and I get out at 12:30. So I got about 3 hours until I got to go get my boy out of school. I had to go up to the doctor to go pick up some paperwork. My initial intentions were to get do that with Odin afterwards, but since I had time, I was able to do it before, which opened up more time in our day. I went by the dispensary and I picked up some medicine. I went to a local park and I climbed down off the path, off of the side of a hill, and I found this really nice rock. And I sat down on that rock and I meditated for 30 minutes. And it's been very few and far between that I could sit down for that long recently. And it was so nice. When I was driving into the park, I was blasting my music, and I remember having this feeling like, oh, who gives a shit if everybody else can hear my music? And my stereo is not that loud, but this is what's funny about the universe, right? Because as soon as I sat down, somebody has these like 12, so they have to be 10 or 12 inch bass speakers. So like, I swear, everywhere, and this is like a big park. It's not like a small park. Not like a jungle gym park. It's like a hiking park. Like a national park, kind of, but not really national. It's like right in the middle of the city, but whatever. So I'm sitting there, and this thing's got to be at least a half mile away from me, but all I hear is just this massive bass over and over and over again, and I'm just getting so angry. And I'm looking at it, and I immediately recognize it, and I immediately see the hypocrisy, because I'm like, when I came in here, my music was on loud, so this person, they can do their music, because I didn't give a shit, so this is only fair, right? And I could see how the universe had given me this moment to test myself, because I'm trying to be quiet and mindful, but I also set this up by my attitude and my karma. So 15, 20 minutes of my 30-minute timer, this bass getting turned down and up, like somebody was talking for a second and turning back up and changing the song. So it's not even like the same rhythm, you know? It's awful. And 15 minutes goes in and I lose it. And I'm like, fuck you, asshole. Why do you gotta be such a dick? Everybody in this park can hear your stupid music, you know? And then they left. And I'd calmed. I'd found my space. And it was a good moment. I was able to watch my breath for a little bit, you know? But when that car left, I can't tell you how grateful I was. The depth of my gratefulness, I was just looking at the sky and just saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because it was such a gift in that moment when they finally left and that quiet came in. You know, and when I drove out, you betcha I didn't have any speaker on. I'm going to be very mindful about the spaces that I drive into, even if I'm not as loud as that guy. And I don't think he was an asshole. Or it might have been a girl. Who knows? Or they. But whoever was in that car was an opportunity for me to practice patience and to practice self-control. And I had one little slip, but I still did pretty good, and I learned a lesson. And going into that break, either way, you know, getting off early used to be a stressful thing for me. Because it was change, and I had all these plans. Like I said, in the morning, I had already planned when I was going to the doctor. So when things change, my brain skizzes out. And I think that the universe has been offering me these changes and these bubbles of time to be with myself and to focus on healthy patterns and healthy ritual. Like, I've been doing better about my meditation. Not great, but every day I sit down for a little bit. You know, and I'm going to meditate on my way to work today. I think I'm going to stop by somewhere and sit down. I hope you are focusing on your own healthy patterns and your own healthy choices and the way that you could set up ripples of routine in your day that make you a little happy. Because we make ourselves happy. We choose happiness. We definitely choose happiness. We also choose happy families too. We make it happen. That's what I'm going to work on this week. Well, let's get into some ancient Chinese wisdom. Just to put the icing on this Friday or Saturday or whenever you're listening to this. I've been reading The Art of War by Sun Tzu. I've been going into it with a particular approach not be mistaken. The chapter that I read yesterday was a chapter 10. It was on terrain. So he distinguishes six kinds of terrain: accessible ground, entangling ground, temporizing ground, narrow passes, precipitous heights, and positions at a great distance from the enemy. And so in my journaling last night, I realized that when Sun Tzu is talking about all of these situations, there is an army, our army, and an enemy. And your army could be an army of one in my mind. So I take a lot of this as a discourse and how I would conduct myself and how I approach reality. You know? But you can also have an army of many, or thousands, or millions. You know? The armies that we fight with nowadays are massive. But in my journal, one of the things I wanted to distinguish is that even though I'm reading this book to help myself grow, I'm not labeling the world. I'm not labeling the universe. I'm not labeling reality or God. I'm not labeling my son even as the enemy. None of this is a discourse on how I want to fight my son or reality, because that's not how I'm going to get by in reality. A lot of this material that I've been getting out of this book has been how to be more gentle, how to be more considerate, how to be more contemplative, how to hesitate. Because the biggest thing with one of the biggest things with Sun Tzu is if you attack, all right, here's a good one. Exactly this. If we know that our own men are in a condition to attack, but are unaware that the enemy is not open to attack, we have gone only halfway towards victory. If we know that the enemy is open to attack, but are unaware that our own men are not in a condition to attack, we have gone only halfway towards victory. If we know that the enemy is open to attack and also know that our men are in a condition to attack, but are unaware that the nature of the ground makes fighting impracticable,
we have to still gone only halfway towards victory. Knowledge of the situation, which a battle is a situation between two aggressive forces. Knowing when to do, which this is the Taoist principle of non-action, non-ado, that I always hearken to. So with myself, how do I hesitate? How do I look at my situation? And the situation that I'm fighting right myself is me. It is mainly my anger and my bad rituals and my bad routines. And so, like last night, that battleground, his state of mind, the way that I set it up, that fight over bedtime, that was not a practical battle. It did more harm than good. And I wasn't a good general when I chose that motion. So accessible ground is ground that is accessible to both. You know, we both have access to it. Entangling ground is when, if you make a move towards the enemy or the situation, if you make a move, a motion in life, and you fail in that motion, you can't go backwards. You can't go backwards anymore. If you fail at a job and you get fired, you can't go back to that job. Temporizing ground is when both you and the situation or whoever you're fighting against, if you make a motion towards there, neither of you win. A narrow pass is like Sparta in 300. And I think we've all heard the old addendum about how if you could put one person in a narrow pass, you can fight an army, which is how the Spartans did it. Precipitous heights, you always want the higher ground. Higher ground, the high sunny ground, the visible ground, because the visibility comes with it knowledge and the ability to get more knowledge and to know the situation better. If you have light on the situation, you're less ignorant. And positions at great distance from an enemy. This one is very interesting. Most big fighting armies and most big fighting countries are at vast distances on this planet because we have set up camps in faraway locations. If you have an equal force, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an analogy. This could even be in like a work situation where you are your own person and there's another person in a different position, maybe even a higher or lower position. Maybe I'm mixing metaphors here. But if somebody's in their own constitutional solidarity place and they're just as strong as you are, there's no reason to attack them because the motion and the movement from distance from your place to the new place is going to weaken your forces and weaken your person so that you will fail and you will lose that battle, according to Sun Tzu. I've been getting stuff out of this. Now an army is exposed to six several calamities. So here's the opposites of the terrains. Flight, insubordination, collapse, ruin, disorganization, and rout. Flight is when a big force has to go up against a small force, and the small force obviously is going to run away. Insubordination is when the general, me, is too weak and the people are too strong. This is what's happening right now. Three, collapse is when the people are too strong and the generals are too weak. And if you don't have good leadership, generals are too strong, people are too weak. If your leadership is too strong and your people aren't adept in doing anything well, then they just fall out. Ruin is when a choice is made by the people because they have resentment. So as a leader, your people resent you. So they choose to go to battle and they fail. That's ruin. Disorganization is when you don't have enough structure and routine in place so that your people get disorganized. And rout is a little confusing. If you aren't knowledgeable enough and you go into a battle unknowledgeable and the forces are too strong, that's rout. But yet again, this is an example about how you can take material. And one of the reasons that I avoided the art of war for such a long time is because of my pacifistic tendencies. And I didn't see how anything that would have to do with warfare would be applicable to me. But obviously, I think you can draw a message even from a book of war on how to be more peaceful. And I honestly think that's what Sun Tzu was going for. He was very Taoist. All right. Short and sweet. Let's do a little bit of Chuang Tzu. So I like Chuang Tzu. Great and small. When we look at things in the light of Tao, nothing is best, nothing is worst, Each thing seen in its own light stands out in its own way. It can seem to be better than what is compared with it on its own terms, but seen in terms of the whole, no one thing stands out as better. If you measure difference, what is greater than something is always great. Therefore, there is nothing that is not great. What is smaller than something else is small. Therefore, there is nothing that is not small. So the whole cosmos is a grain of rice, and the tip of a hair is as big as a mountain, such is the relative view. You can break down walls with battering rams, but you cannot stop holes with them. All things have different uses. Fine horses can travel 100 miles in a day, but they cannot catch mice, like terriers or weasels. All creatures have gifts of their own. The white-horned owl can catch fleas at midnight and distinguish the tip of a hair. But in bright day, it stares helpless and cannot even see a mountain. All things have varying capacities. Consequently, he who wants to have right without wrong, order without discipline, does not understand the principles of heaven and earth. He does not know how things hang together. Can a man cling only to heaven and know nothing of earth? They are correlative. To know one is to know the other. To refuse one is to refuse both. Can a man cling to the positive without any negative in contrast to what is seen to be positive? If he claims to do so, he is a rogue or a madman. Thrones pass from dynasty to dynasty. Now in this way, now in that. He who forces his way to power against the grain is called tyrant and usurper. He who moves with the stream of events is called a wise statesman. Kui, the one-legged dragon, is jealous of the centipede. The centipede is jealous of the snake. The snake is jealous of the wind. The wind is jealous of the eye. The eye is jealous of the mind. Kui said to the centipede, I manage my one leg with difficulty. How can you manage 100? The centipede replied, I do not manage them. They land all over the place like drops of spit, the centipede said to the snake. With all my feet, I cannot move as fast as you do with no feet at all. How is this done? The snake replied, I have a natural glide that can't be changed. What do I need with feet? The snake spoke to the wind. I ripple my backbone and move along in a bodily way. You, without bones, without muscle, without method, blow from the North Sea to the Southern Ocean. How do you get there with nothing? The wind replied, true. I rise up in the North Sea and take myself without obstacle to the Southern Ocean. But every eye that remarks me, every wing that uses me, is superior to me, even though I cannot uproot the biggest tree or overturn big buildings. The true conqueror is he who is not conquered by the multitude of the small. The mind is this conqueror, but only the mind of the wise man. I feel I've read this one before. It's fine. I'll go back to things that were positive to me and seemed to have an effect on me in the first place, and that's why I keep bringing them up. This has to do with the golden mean the most. He says, if what makes something better is its relation to another. If I have a large boulder, it's bigger than a bowling ball. So it's greater than a bowling ball? Sure. But a bowling ball is also bigger than a pebble. Does that make it better than the pebble, or bigger or greater, therefore, than the pebble? Perhaps. But what about the molecule and the atoms and everything else that's smaller than the pebble? When do you stop? When can you draw a line on when things can't be greater or better or bigger or smaller than something else? The relation is required to make that judgment. And who makes the relation? The Taoist, the human, the man, the woman, the they. We make the relation by holding two things in our hand and noticing that there's a difference. We make the difference by labeling things. When at the end of the day, the only thing that is existent is the unity of everything, is the conglomerate, is the universal loaf, is this gigantic vegetable soup that is our world and is our present moment. And I want to say publicly that I am so grateful for every moment. I'm so thankful for every opportunity that I am given. I'm so grateful to have this opportunity to speak with you, and I hope to speak with you more. Thank you so much for tuning in again to the Gingerbread Man Show. Remember, hit that hot link at the bottom. I would love to talk to you. And I hope you have a wonderful week where you can look at your sleeping patterns. Think about your routines. Think about how you could try to sleep better. Maybe consider having a dream journal like me, you know? Also, consider being more empathetic towards your children. Consider how you can put yourself into the mind state of your child. Think about how, if you were your kid looking at what you do, would you consider yourself fair? And even if you can't swallow the concept of fairness that your child has in this moment, can you step away from yourself long enough to try to understand how they could feel the way that they do? Last but not least, stay curious. Go find something that moves you. For me, recently it's been ancient Chinese wisdom. But there are a bajillion roads to travel and a bajillion roads to walk. And there's so many different things in this world to be curious about and to remind you why you are such an amazing person. An amazing person that's in my life, an amazing person that is in affecting all the other amazing people that are in your life. And don't forget to let them know. To end my show this week, we're going to go on to my favorite segment, Ask O. Come on over here, bud. He happens to be right here.
Okay, hello, people. It's me, Ask O, again.
Really?
So, I'm having good days.
You are. I'm very proud of you.
And I got another... So, I'll tell you what I got here.
What'd you get here?
So, I got two new discs. I got a Sonic Dix, Forces, and a Paw Patrol disc.
Nice.
Super Paw Patrols.
It looks really cool. Mhm. Those are rewards.
Yep.
You got rewards because you were doing amazing. And you've been making really good choices. And that's why Daddy's so proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
High five. Dude. We're going to have another good day today.
Uh-huh.
You know what happens after Friday?
What?
Are we going to go do a movie tomorrow?
Yes.
Yes. That you get to pick, huh?
Yeah.
Because if he has a good day today, then that means the entire week was good. Because my son is killing it.
Daddy wants to talk. Do you want to get the movie I'm ready for tomorrow?
We'll look at it after school. As soon as I pick you up, we'll go on my phone. So my question for you today, son, I was talking about empathy and how I could... try to look into your eyes more and to try to think how you think more, and I can try to respect your feelings more because you are your own human. You are your own man, and I want to respect your feelings and your thoughts more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah. But
as a group, though, me and you, we're a team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's on my team?
Odin.
We're a team of two, right?
Yeah, I didn't mean Odin. I mean Asko.
Asko. That's good. But we're a team of two, right?
Yeah.
Look this way, buddy.
We make...
How can we be a better team? How can I help you and help me be a better team? From what advice would you have to give me as your dad? What do you think I could do better?
Be what you have, happy.
Oh, you want me to be happy?
Wait, give me a second. I'll think of my question.
Okay, Odin will be right back. He's on a journey. It appears. Okay.
So my question is, every time when I have a bad day, it feels tough in my body.
Yeah.
And my heart is just pumping blood.
Right?
Yeah.
And it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. That's not a good feeling. I feel like that sometimes too. It's kind of gross, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Could I help you relieve that feeling?
Yeah.
I can help you try to make it a little easier, huh?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Do you have anything you want to say anything to everybody before we say bye?
Bye.
You want to say anything?
Yeah. So, my question today for Ask O, if you guys want to answer it, is Happy Christmas.
Okay. Happy Christmas, guys. We'll talk to you next week.